du Scheiße. Jetzt fängt er natürlich an. Nee, also ich bin in 3 Sekunden da. Go, weg. Ja. Dauert noch eine kurze Sekunde, dann bin ich zwei.
Pepefolie 3 ist bitte.
Okay, da sind wir. So. Also, wir wollten heute reden über, was ist alles... Krypto für Mobile Devices gibt, und dann wollen wir ein bisschen reden über, was wir so selber an Lösungen dazu ausgedacht haben, und das wird sich, weil das jetzt sich ein bisschen annähert, fertig zu sein, es wird sich konzentrieren auf Sams. Ich werde das alles auf Englisch machen, weil mein Englisch halt ein wenig besser ist als mein Deutsch. Crypto for Wireless Devices. Let's look at some problems. Let me turn this to big. Where was that little button? There we are. As you can see, there's a number of fields where problems on your wireless device are. If you have a wireless device and you're keeping information on it that you'd like to remain secure, or if you're doing traffic on it that you'd like to remain secure, then basically these are the problem fields. There's local storage on the device itself. There's your email traffic, your spoken voice, and the SMS traffic. Local storage can be solved. There are programs for various organizers that crypt files. There's not, that I know of, a really good crypted file system which crypts everything for any of the popular organizers, not for Palm OS, not for Windows CE / Pocket PC, not for, as I know of, not for Epoch as well. There will be... But solving this problem is very much dependent on the organizer. It's very hard to think of a common solution that would fix the problem for all phones or organizers or handhelds. Email is another problem. Of course, email already has a standard, PGP, which is a problem in itself because PGP is going to die and AI is not maintaining it anymore. GPG, as far as I care, is not ready. It's not ready for the ordinary person to use it. There's not one GUI, but there's like 10. And PGP will die the time the next new releases of all the popular mailers come out, and there's no plugins anymore, and people will just stop using it. The number of users for PGP went up dramatically when the plugins came out and when it was really easy to use. And it will go down just as dramatically as the new Outlook is not supported anymore and the new Eudora isn't supported anymore. So we're facing the death of PGP fairly imminently. Anyway, there is PGP compiled for some handhelds. There's PGP that I know of for Epoch and thus for the Nokia 9210 generation of phones. There's PGP for Palm OS. However, those versions are always RSA keys only, so they can only communicate with people that have PGP 2.6 or equivalent keys, and not any of the new keys. This will eventually be solved. Somebody will compile GPG for a handheld platform, at which point you can use modern keys and communicate. Then there's voice crypto. As some of you may know, the company that we founded in Amsterdam has two major projects that we're working on. One is voice cryptography, where we're basically writing a core of code which does voice compression using kelp, and then has a packet protocol where it can transfer that call over a GSM data channel, which, because of all the overhead, is a lot slower than a GSM voice channel. So it can transfer a call that only sounds slightly worse over a GSM data channel and make it into a voice call at the other end. We're still working on that. I don't want to concentrate on that because we don't have any white papers out. The protocol is still under revision, and we're still highly working on that. The fourth problem area is SMS. And for SMS, we have been working on a solution for a while, and we have a standard, or what we hope to be a standard one day, and we're working on reference implementations. So I'd like to concentrate on that a little bit. The SMS problem, 50 billion SMS messages were sent globally in the first quarter of 2001. Analyzing all that traffic is affordable because it's relatively small. So if you're the NSA, it would be one of the first things you focus on because you don't need to do any nifty voice analysis, pattern analysis. This is your cheap and easy way to get billions of messages and try to filter out which look interesting or match interesting patterns for you to see if they warrant further research by voice analysis or human analysts or whatever. SMS traffic is not encrypted. It travels the network without any encryption on it. And also it's very trivial to fake who the sender of an SMS message is. So there's an authenticity problem on the network as well. I can send anyone here an SMS message coming from whoever they want, from themselves, from the Pope, whoever. Conventional solutions don't really work. This is Hello World, encrypted to one 124-bit RSA key. It's already too long for one SMS message, and that's just the text Hello World. SMS traffic makes up the most expensive bits ever on Earth. Calculate it out. If you fill all the SMSs to the max, which nobody does, usually an SMS is only a few words, but if you fill out all the SMSs to the max, then even then, SMS traffic costs €1,500 per megabyte. This is good business. So whatever the solution is, we feel has to live up to these specifications. It has to be an open standard. We feel it has to have the same basic functionality that PGP has. It has to have a public key system. It has to do encryption. It has to do signing, both of messages and of keys, so you can have a network of trust, sort of. It has to provide for the ability to revoke keys and whatever other functionality from PGP we think we need. It should provide the maximum cryptographic strength possible. It should be implemented on whatever handheld devices you may have. So it should be also portable to the next generation of handheld devices. And we're going to start with handhelds because that's what we can get code onto. It is extremely hard to convince the cellular industry or the mobile phone manufacturers to put anything on the phone or the SIM that will run. So we decided to go after the handhelds, the organizers, and within a year or 2 years or 3 years, a lot of your current phones will be general purpose operating system platforms. You will have a phone that other third parties can program code for. And also we wanted to minimize what the attacker sees. We don't want the attacker possibly to see that it's even a key being sent instead of a message, or that I'm signing somebody else's message or key. Or we want to keep that meta information to a minimum. The attacker should just see there is encrypted traffic on the network. And very importantly, and the major design criterion for what we have done, is it must, under all circumstances, minimize the number of messages sent. Users will not use this if it costs them 2 Deutschmarks or 1 euro something or whatever to send a message, because it gets split up into 4 or 5 or 6 chunks. It must, any message, any reasonably short text message, must travel the minimum number of SMSs. Okay, what have we done? We've built a system that uses RSA public key cryptography, and we use RSA directly. This is where I'm going to get a little technical, but I will shift out of this mode again and try to talk about what the general importance of all of this is. We're using RSA directly. RSA, as some of you know, is a trick with large numbers where the fact that it's much harder to factor a number into two primes than to multiply two primes to make that large number is actually used to keep a secret. It's actually used in a way where one party has the public key to another party and can only encrypt, and only the person holding the secret key that goes with that public key and was calculated together with it can decrypt it. Anyway, we use RSA directly, meaning our messages do not, such as in PGP, have a session key. In PGP, the entire message is encrypted with a symmetrical algorithm and a session key, and then only the session key is transferred using this public key method, because the public key method is fairly expensive. It takes a lot of computer time. Here the messages are so short, and the medium in which they have to fit is also so short, that it makes sense to just encrypt the message directly using RSA. We've picked two key sizes, and only these two fixed key sizes are used, and the two key sizes are chosen so that the output fits exactly one or exactly two SMS messages. Here's the key sizes. Here's something to be said about those key sizes. This is what Lenstra and Verheul, two famous researchers in the cryptography field, think of as unbreakable. And their definitions of unfeasible are fairly strict. It means it is literally unthinkable that any agency, no matter who, could theoretically build a computer that cracks a key that length. That is their assumption. So this is not what the RSA, the NSA or anybody is expected to have or sort of deemed to have. It is what is theoretically feasible. And this is where they put an 1112-bit key that comes out as feasible around 2007 or so, and a 2208-bit key becomes feasible around 2027. Anyway. As you can see, keys that are less secure are still widely used in all sorts of standards that surround us. Let's go on to the next slide. As you can see, messages encrypted to a medium security key, as we call it, the 1100-something bits key, takes up one SMS. The high security message takes two SMSs, and a message can include a signature. So one SMS can be a signed message of around 100 characters, depending on which encoding scheme you use. I'll get to that. And it can include one signature in that same security. So if I have a medium security key and you have a medium security key, I can send you a message and sign it, all in one SMS. Key exchange takes one SMS more, because we have to send some metadata as well, and we have to be able to encrypt it if we want to. And then I can send detached signatures, which travel separately over messages or keys. So I can send any of you a key that is signed by three of your friends. Of course, in SEMS, just as a side note, if we send somebody a key, I was thinking of taking the questions later.
In the middle.
It's going to be very uncomfortable for the hand if you keep it up that long. Any signature that gets sent over a key, in PGP, I would just basically include everybody that's ever signed my key. If I have to pay 50 cents per 140 bytes, I don't do that. I send only the signatures of people that you are likely to know, because I don't want to pay for it. So those are detached signatures. How much fits in one message? This is without without an included signature, so this is if we're not signing that message. And it depends. If we use 5-bit characters, which means we use a telex Baudot-style alphabet, we actually modified the alphabet that was used on the punched paper tape for the telex machines. Some of you may still remember if you're old enough. And we actually get, out of these caps-only characters, we get 196 in an SMS, which is more than the 160 that you can put in an unencrypted SMS if you just use the standard feature in your telephone. 6-bit characters with a little more special characters, but still capitals only, we get 163 in. 7-bit characters, which is what you're used to if you're sending an SMS, which allows you for upper and lower case and all that good stuff, is 140 characters. And 8-bit bytes, if you decide to send a binary message, we can get 122 8-bit bytes in. And these are the, underneath are the numbers for if you send a high security message to somebody that has a larger key, then you have to send 2 SMSs anyway, so you can also send more bits. For the people that are into cryptography among you, we do dangerous things with cryptography. We use a small fixed exponent, and we use RSA directly, so our message is in the RSA directly. And we are, our messages are very long with respect to the key length. We have some random padding, but it's only 80 bits worth. So we're in danger of all sorts of ugly attacks against our cipher. Bleichenbacher,
and Coppersmith.
And Coppersmith and some other famous cryptographers have done interesting attacks. These are a number of those attacks. So we added 80 bits of random padding to each packet to make sure that plain text guessing is not possible, because you could, if I have the public key of the recipient of a message, I could just start guessing messages. If I know that the answer to this question is either yes or no, then I can encrypt yes and no to that key and see if any of them matches. To make sure that can't happen, there's 80 bits of random padding, so that I would have to guess the right 80 bits, which 80 bits worth of possibilities to try over an RSA of more than 1,000 bits is again unfeasible. There's redundancy, which makes it harder to perform attacks where you're creating something that looks like ciphertext but isn't, where you're actually modifying the ciphertext bits and forcing the recipient to do to perform a decryption on it and give out its secrets by what comes out of the decryption. Yep. If I explain it right, I am no cryptographer. And then there's a problem where if the attacker knows part of the input, which is true if you have a message which is padded with lots of zeros at the end, or if you know the length of a message or something, we still don't know. The attacker doesn't get an advantage from that, doesn't know what it went into the RSA function. And we do that by shake. Rudy will talk a little bit more about that later. Shake is basically a scheme where we take lots of SHA-1 hashes to make sure that if one bit changes in the input of that RSA, of that shake function, then all the bits in the output change. It's a keyless function that makes it unpredictable if you know only part of the input, what comes out on the output. To say that more scientifically, it distributes the entropy of the input over all the bits of the output. To swap to another issue, SEMS, as we've developed it, is an open standard. Other parties can and should build clients, remailers, key servers, and whatever else you can think of. We're building SEMS clients. We've actually devised a product name for it. We've called it Secutext, which is a much more corporate name than SEMS, we think. And we're currently planning reference implementations for the Palm, the Nokia 9110, the 9210, the Psion, the iPad, and whatever other platforms come out and become popular. We have a core, and some of you may recognize these slides from this summer when we did this presentation at HAL. Difference is that today I can show you running code, which I will do right after these slides. Our client software that we are building is free for non-commercial use, and the source will be publicly available, which is not the same as free. We want to keep the development rights to our source, but everybody can look at it. It's sort of the PGP model of showing people the code for peer review. And we're hoping to start the review process by funding independent review by famous cryptographers that you might or might not know, to see that the standard and our reference implementations match what they think is secure. This is our basic business plan on a single slide. Private use is free, but we sell the commercial licenses to anybody that needs secure SMSs, which includes stockbrokers, banks, large corporations. Anybody that needs security on the SMS channel, but probably more the authenticity of it. SENS is the perfect underlying layer for, say, a payment system or a stockbroker that wants to transfer the deals and have authenticity on that channel. Because there is a number of solutions out there that use the fact that you have received an SMS and can actually relay what's in there as authenticity. Of course, if the air channel is unencrypted, this is inherently weak, and it's just waiting for the first person with GSM test equipment to come along and really do a number on them. There is proposed standards for authentication. There's all sorts of talk of security modules in the phone and giving everybody a special SIM which holds their identity, centralizing it all through the cellular providers. We've decided not to wait for that because that talk was already there 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And we've decided to put something small and decentralized into the market and see if there's a market for it. As it said here, we've mostly concentrated on actually getting something done, making sure that we have something that we can show to people. The SEMS clients. The one we're building, I'm going to show it to you, so this slide is actually it actually says things which I'm going to show to you, so I'll just show it to you. Hold on, the demo. Okay, I have here yes, I do.
Not in this operation.
Current window only.
White or black? Is that the place? Is that color?
No, I need.
I'll see what I can do. Font. Colors. Screen text. Yeah. Does this work? Yeah, okay. There we go. It's just a very quick demo. There's a SEMS binary where there's currently only this command line version, but the GUI is not really the hard part. As you can see, the command line version has quite a few options. They're not every single one of them is implemented yet, but most of them are. And SEMS has something which you might have seen already. SEMS has this interesting thing we call the blob, and the blob is this 12 kilobyte file there, which is encrypted. I've currently turned the encryption off, but it's encrypted and it holds all the information relevant to SEMS, because SEMS has a lot of intermediate information. A message may come in as two SMSs. Multiple of these two SMS blocks may be chained together to form a much longer message. It may contain keys, it may contain all sorts of information, and you may have mailboxes for your SEMS client. Everything takes place in that blob, and the blob has sort of a file system of its own. It's a file system that we don't export to the underlying operating system, because that would make it like a hairy 5-year project, and it would depend way too much on what the underlying operating system is. So instead, we only use that operating system within the SEMS binary, but it allows us to make an environment in which there is no information available to the attacker. The attacker doesn't have key rings. If the attacker gets a hold of the device, steals it, the attacker has no key rings, has no nothing. As long as the attacker doesn't have your passphrase, your mailboxes are secure, which is a problem with most PGP plugins, is that you decrypt and then it ends up in your normal system. It gets pissed all over the disk cache. It gets it's in your RAM. It's everywhere. And on this device, we try to at least keep the file storage clean, where no information is written anywhere outside our own files inside that blob file system. We can make a blob. There's the new blob option. We can set a blob size. We can grow the blob and shrink the blob. It auto grows the blob if it outruns that 12 kilobytes. And it has mailboxes inside that blob and everything. So what I'm going to try to demo here, for which I need this text, which I just had to close because I had to reboot. We're improvising on the fly here. There we go. I was going to demonstrate it with actually sending the SMSs, but we found out that the modem part of the Nokia 9210 is actually very crappy on the version of the software I have. Problems you don't want to know about. So instead I'm just going to demonstrate it locally and hope you'll believe that sending the 140 bytes over SMS is not the problem. SEMS consists of a binary and another binary called POL. And the POL binary basically sits there and waits for SMS messages to come into the phone or for messages to appear in the out directory. I'll show that later. That's the only unencrypted things SEMS keeps in the file system, are the in and the out directory, where the messages from and to the phone lie, because they have went over the air in that form anyway. So they don't. We figured they don't expose the user to any risks that they're not normally exposed to. Let me generate a key. SEMS minus 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 generate key equals medium. I'll make a medium security key. Ask me for a name. Test blah. And a telephone number. 31. There we go. Expiration date. And then it goes and generates the key. This might actually take longer on some mobile devices than on this nice Pentium OS. And then if I list the keys, you can see that I already made one for myself, and there's another key called test blah. This information comes from the key ring, which is inside that blob file. Now I can... check what the command line option. Why I'm looking all this up is because this binary and the fact that it actually works the way it does like this is less than a week or so old. So you're looking at brand new code. I want to send a normal message to a key. That's to send keys. Receive and verify the key. Send and there we go. Create message. User verbose. Okay. Create message. I'll send it to that test user, and I'll say blah test blah letter mark Reuter. And now it's encrypted, and if I go to the out directory, you can see here there's a 3165. That's actually the phone number. Of course, this version of the command interpreter lacks tab completion. That's actually the format we chose for those files, so it's very easy to understand. Send from this, use that as the originator number, send it to that. Mobile telephone number, date, yes. That's a debug feature. And this is the data, and if you count, it's exactly 140 bytes in hex. So this is one SMS message. It'll never be more or less than 140 bytes. It's always exactly that. So these are the messages we send. And now if I copy that to the inbox, so copy... and then run the SEMS binary again get SMS, it'll say there's an incoming message from that number, blah, test, blah, blah. So it saw that something was in its incoming inbox and decrypted it. So this binary is completely, the source to this is written in ANSI C, so it basically compiles on anything. And that that daemon that actually takes the SMS messages and puts them in the in and out directory is fairly trivial on any device that can send and receive SMSs. So we've written a core piece of code around which we only need a GUI and around which we need to create product, which will happen in the next few months. This is sort of where my demonstration ends, and I want to pass it on to Rudy for some cryptographic nitty-gritty.
You have killed the beamer.
I thought the beamer. There we go.
So. Okay. Okay, I want to give the English talk. So requested you get what you want.
Not so Deutsch.
No, tons. I want to motivate why it's sometimes useful to have a mathematician in town. Sometimes useful, and not in any scenarios, but sometimes even some horrible things like provable secure cryptography is. Oh, sorry. Something like provable cryptography is an interesting feature, and that's funny because even in the crypto community, the normal cryptographers always smile about mathematicians who wants to prove something, that's something secure, and from a hacker standpoint, it's clear that nothing is secure, and the hacker is right, and the mathematician is wrong, but theory is important, at least in theory. There's nothing more practical than a good theory. But sometimes it's not so difficult to find a real problem for a beautiful solution. I worked hard on it, and it was one of my... first, some words about protocol design. Dr. Ian Goldberg says don't do it, because he will destroy it, and he also tried this with our protocol and found only a small bit error. I was a bit disappointed that he found a bit error, but it's better than using the protocol to survive Ian Goldberg. Secure algorithms are not mandatory, not sufficient for secure protocols. You can design beautiful protocols which are easy to break with a nice algorithm. We have seen some examples. Theoretical attacks are sometimes much clearer than expected. Some examples from 2001, that I've demonstrated yesterday in a talk. A PGP key format is also a heuristic construction, and there are attacks from Rosa and Klima which just don't decrypt the secret key, but attack the secret key in the encrypted form, and this is because the format in which PGP uses for the secret keys has no provable security, and is really heuristic and hand designed. And one of my favorite things is the NSA has published the chain mode, and this is cracked in less than 23 hours by David Wagner and Ian Goldberg, and the NSA is a biggest organization of mathematicians, and not even these people can do it. If it's provable secure, it's provable not secure, because you can prove security only in a theoretical model. But there's a really interesting theoretical and practical model which is called the random oracle model. You maybe know the historical oracle where beautiful virgins using psychedelic drugs and tell something about the future. Something similar is here designed. You stand outside, an attacker stands outside and sends some plain text requests to this black box, and there is a funny looking demon inside. Next time I try to make a real Oracle model. And this demon splits the coin, and if there's a one with the coin, the demon presents the result of the cryptographic algorithm. If there's a zero, he will continue flipping the coin and will present a random rubbish. And we can there's much interesting mathematics behind it, but you can think about it from the standpoint of attacker. If attacker cannot decide if it's if some data is purely a random noise or is the result of a cryptographic algorithm, he has no hook to attack the whole system. So we have a huge margin of security when because if an attacker can attack a system, he can get information about the output of the system and can use it for an attack in this week, a random Oracle model. Just keep in mind that there might be a mathematical interesting model which might be practically usable, but it's really a strong model. I started some research with a public key, a Robin public key scheme. It's based on the Gravot problem. It's provably secure as factorization. So from an academical standpoint, it's at least from a real standpoint, it's at least as secure as A. From a theoretical standpoint, it's even a bit nicer because we can prove this equivalence, which is not proven for SR till now. It's a bit faster than ISA because the encryption only needs one modular squaring, and in the best case ISR needs one modular squaring and one modular multiplication. So even in the best case, it's about 40% faster than RSA. There's a problem, there's some redundancy needed, and this point, because the output of this public key schemes will be four possible solutions, and so we have to decide which solution is the right solution. If we transmit a random session key, then it's impossible to decide which random bits, which of the possible four possible results of the random bits is a real solution we want to have. And for this reason, we have to add some redundancy to select the right method from the four possible solution of this equation. And at this point on, normal mathematicians stop working, because if you need some redundancy, you have to put some new algorithm in, and then you don't have any provable security anymore. This is from a theoretical standpoint absolutely acceptable, but a practical standpoint, all signature schemes we use hash functions anyway. And if we have problems with the hash functions, we will have it before we do the long int operation. And so from a practical standpoint, it's not really a problem to have a hash function in the real scheme. And so I have continued to, I have taken a look on PTRCS1, version 1.5. And it's totally rubbish. I was shocked. I took a look on it in 1998. And they use FFS padding for signature. And they use this structure with OO. This all bytes, O2, a padding scheme OOD. And there's a lot of usable bits. And the first thing I have seen is that there's not really pseudo-random, because it's not OO bytes are not allowed. This means a small statistical bias. It's not usable in practice, but its theoretical result is not nice. But from this starting point, I want to make really only a solution for some mathematical nicer construction. I started really to take a look on this practical stuff, and we found a scheme which is, which you see here, we use a lot of mixing, and this is provably secure. in a strong sense. This is a scheme designed by Stefan Lutz and me. And what we are doing is just use some hash function. You and we are hash functions, and we do a lot of dirty tricks with the random padding, which is not used, which is useless in the old padding scheme. And we do a lot of random operation, hash operation, randomization, which improves the security also in a practical sense. And then we use the F function is a really expensive public key operation. And then we get a message which has really nice provably secure schemes. This was all esoterical math till this point. But in the same year, 1998, Bleichenbacher showed that polite web servers can be really hacked by sending faked SR messages. What is the idea? The idea is to send special constructed packets to a web server, and the web server decrypts and says thank you for this message, but please use the right padding scheme. And if you choose a message which is after decryption fits to this padding scheme, it says thank you have sent me a message, everything is okay, but I don't understand it, you sent me rubbish, but the padding scheme is right. And this politeness, you really like to have it in your protocols, this politeness can be used for a dangerous attack to get really information about encrypted messages. And though every practical guy says to me, oh, you do rubbish, it's impossible to send 1 million requests to a smart card to get the secret key, it took months. And when you have a web server, then it's not a big problem when you have 1 million requests on it. And after 1 million requests, you really get information about the secret, encrypted messages. And as you see, that is not a theoretical voodoo. ASRA has switched to a provable, secure, optimal asymmetric encryption scheme. This is a scheme by Bernard Rockaway. From a theoretical standpoint, it's not so secure as our scheme, but it has been a bit faster. This is acceptable. But it's theoretically, it's a very secure scheme anyway. The difference between our scheme is a really academic question. The new standard, the new ISL standard, you can take a look on this page, using this theoretical proven secure schemes. So let's go into praxis. Rob has told a lot about SMS. It's really ridiculously expensive. We designed the protocol, and it was a big fun to generate this protocol because we have heavily discussed every bit. Because I'm a cryptographer, I like to have some bits for my cryptography, for my random padding, and Rob wants to make sure that the message which have been sent are as long as possible, because you can use this construction we have presented also in packet network scenario. And so I really had to learn that I have to modify, that I have to motivate the use of every bit, and this was really a nice exercise to do it after doing theoretical stuff for such a long time. So the main idea is that usually schemes submit a session key, and this means in our scenario just a problem with the length. We have to submit the public key, the session key encrypted with the public key length. That means 1024 bit in the ASR scenario. And then we have to transmit the full plain text. And in the scenario of PGP, we have also an initial vector. We might have padding, we don't have, we have something like padding in the OpenPGP standard, for instance. We have not really padding, but initial vector and the checksum using and other schemes using padding. And that means the message is much longer if we use a hybrid scheme. And so we use ASR directly, and this is really a very dangerous scenario. Just take a look in Bruce book and you find pages and pages why nobody uses ASR directly. And it's risky, because it's mass, and mass can be attacked by mass directly. It's always too good to have some randomization, some hash functions or so in a protocol, because randomization means that you cannot use mathematical tools in an appropriate way to attack this scheme. And for this reason, I had really a problem to find sleep when I have decided to use alpha directly, especially in a scenario where we want to have small exponents like 3, because we have not so powerful devices, and we have very long messages. And if you look, for instance, on the Coppersmith attack against a catalyst scenario, it's very horrible. In this scenario, this attack by Coppersmith, one of the authors of DES, it's shown that it's possible to get a lot of information of a message if you know a part of a message. If you use it in a normal mode, a short message, and fill it with zeros or fill it with a normal padding, this scenario is exactly given in practice. So you have really to take a close look on every step you do, on every bit you use. I could find some sleep when I realized that we have a ridiculous provable secure ridiculous in the sense that we use too much mathematical construction. We have a provable scheme, and that means I can go to the limit. I know exactly that every bit take an effect on every other bit in our construction. So if an attacker only knows a part of the message, and we mix all bits, he cannot attack the whole system. And so it was really helpful to have provable security margins, because we can go to the limit. And really, in this scenario, we have a scheme which is provably secure, which has nice mathematical properties, and it's faster and has a lot of other advantages compared to these practical heuristical schemes. What are the techniques? We use random padding, as Rob told. Random padding is always a good thing, because then attacker has to guess a lot of more bits. I want, by the way, of course, I want 128 bit for random padding, and then we dealed a lot, and we came to 80 bit random padding. That is enough, because every bit I use for my random padding is not usable for useful messages, and so 80 bit is hardly acceptable, but acceptable in this scenario for a cryptographer. So we stopped fighting at the point, okay, 80 bits, but then I give you a bit there. It was really great fun. And we need some redundancy. This is another fight for some bits. We use CSC in this protocol. And as I told you yesterday, you should only do this if you know what you are doing. And I think I know a bit what I do. This CSC is not a checksum. This CSC is just a weak redundancy function. We use CSC there. It's not a checksum as used in the web protocol. It's just a redundancy function which is useful. And for especially, we had a discussion to use 32 zeros in a line for redundancy reason and not CSC. As you see, it has cryptographical only has only cryptographical sense to avoid this plain text, this chosen ciphertext attacks. Because redundancy means attacker, as I told you in the Bleichenbacher scenario, attacker has to design some fake packets, which means he sends it through and decrypt it when you say it's rubbish or it's not rubbish. But he has to design these packets very carefully to attack this. If you get a message and have some redundancy and decrypt it, and you get as a result, this is not a result of an RSA operation with the right padding scheme, you can say, I don't talk to you anymore, because you want to fake an attack. because you have some redundancy, you can check if an attacker has designed a special packet to attack your scheme. And if you have some redundancy after decryption, you can prove you have indication that it's a real packet and not a fake packet, as I told you. And another thing is randomization. We really mix every bit with any other bit, and this is also a theoretical scheme we have developed. It's just 6 or 7 hash functions, so it's no performance problem at all. I think we can use this this design we have invented in all packets with small in all networks with small packets, because there are really some security advantages. We have no security problems with symmetrical encryption because we have no symmetrical encryption involved. It saves us a bit source code. The second point is very important in practice. We don't need a strong random source. Please keep in mind, if we use a hybrid schemes, we need a strong random source to generate the session key. Almost all known practical attacks attack the random generation on small devices. For instance, you have no room to generate strong random if you have just
a strong random during key generation.
Yeah, but only one time.
You can
fill this in key generation, and of course you might generate your key on a powerful device and download it to a SEMS. Or another thing is, if you do a key generation, you don't do very often, so you can use a very over-designed key generation process. But in a scenario you have a hybrid scheme, you have to have some strong random in every encryption operation, and not so strong, but pretty strong random in every signature operation. This is not the case if you use that directly, and this is also a big practical advantage. The random padding
has to be unguessable.
Yeah, the random padding. You are right. The random padding is involved, but this is not a random padding which has to be strong as a secret key. It has to be pretty okay. Even an attacker can guess a lot of random bits. He has already a problem to attack the RSS scheme. He has to guess all 80 bits to this 80 bits is a lower limit. This 80 bits of minimum random padding means if you fill the message with 140 bits, 140 bytes, or 100 bytes, we add 80 bits of random. If you have a shorter message, we use some 100 additional bytes of random. And this random is only to make secure that nobody can guess it. For instance, if I send a message to somebody which asks me, should I buy this stock, and I send the message yes or no, then an attacker can try yes or no and encrypt it with my public key and can take a look what message I have sent it. If I put 80 bits of random, he has to generate 2^80 different messages. But this, even in a scenario, to make it clear, more clear, in a scenario, an attacker can guess, for instance, 30 bits of your random number. He has also to perform 250 operations. Only in a scenario you have filled up a message with more than 100 bytes. So you are right, there is also random involved, but this random has much lower, it has not been so strong as a...
I think the simple way to say it is the random only has to be unguessable. It doesn't have to perform to any statistical analysis. It doesn't It doesn't matter if there are certain statistical properties about that random that can be proven, as long as you don't guess those actual bits.
And in a scenario where you have session keys, it's very dangerous if an attacker can guess some statistical relation between the bits. And in our scenario, we have much weaker properties we need for this scenario. And this is only two slides. And it's really worth a thought in all scenarios where we have a smaller packet length than 1,000 to 4,096 bits.
Okay, that is discussion, and maybe we can think about it. I think SENSE could be a really secure packet network. In the first time IP, nobody has thought about the fact that IP everywhere property. And so maybe if we have a secure packet network and we have some clients for this packet construction in Java, it would be very useful.
Yeah, we've been thinking about. Of course, when we started all this, we knew that GPRS was coming, always on. Devices with connectivity in your pocket, where the bits are much cheaper. So we knew that we were basically building on SMS, which was still supported on GPRS phones, but might not be as dominant for the sending and receiving of messages. However, we then figured that, of course, one of the killer apps for GPRS is ICQ-like group communication, where you can send messages to your friends or to whole groups, so sort of IRC-like communication. If you want to encrypt that, you need to encrypt messages, and these messages then get sent to maybe 10 of your friends. So even though the bits are much cheaper, you end up sending bits to many more people where the recipient actually pays. So it makes even more sense to use packets of minimum length if you need that encryption. So we figured it still made sense to design a packet protocol which uses really few bits.
Definitely, and another property as a final remark before we come to the question. Of course, we have all packets have no different lengths, and this is really a useful property when we think about things about traffic analysis. There will be an interesting talk about traffic analysis later, and there has been an interesting talk about traffic analysis of encrypted streams. We have the property that all our packets have the same length, and so no additional information for wire traffic will be provided. Okay, that's the first question.
Why haven't you chosen another asymmetric algorithm like elliptic curve cryptography, which with much, much, much shorter keys? Sorry for this question. So your devices are too slow to handle that, or what?
One of the problems with elliptic curve is that the message doesn't actually travel the bits that the key travels. With elliptic curve, you have to again send a session key. You cannot send the message directly.
Yes, so what? But they are so sharp that you can set up a hybrid scheme with that.
Elliptic curves is voodoo. I have advised one master thesis in 1999, and I think I'm about 100 which have a small understand of elliptic curves. And when I get more and more information about elliptic curves, I really agree with Bruce Schneier. If you can use as, I use as. Only if you have choose about no cryptography or elliptic curves, you should use elliptic curves. And I think there was an interesting talk in the morning, in the middle of the night, some things ago. I have read this article, and it's interesting that the BSI, the German stupidity agency, tries to push forward elliptic curves, and they have switched from 160 bits to 256 bits without
deep modifications, so they are not sure what they are doing, and it's not a good idea. And even especially in our scenario, it would be not a good idea to use elliptic curves first. Rob has mentioned ASA perfectly fits with the message length of the ASA key length. We can use one ASA operation, and if you use your elliptic curves cryptography, for instance, elliptic curves cryptography has only advantage if you use a scheme based on the discrete logarithmus problem. And this scenario, almost all protocols, you have to transmit two times the key length. You have to, and this means 512 bit wasted for transmitting the session key. And this means that we have the same, almost the same problem as in the ASA scenario without a warm and fuzzy feeling. Especially if you do elliptic curve. if you do elliptic curves additionally, you will have the random noise problem. And so elliptic curves is cool if you're a mathematician, and we're soon out of work to go to industry conferences and present new rudimentary mathematical construction which nobody understands in the room, and everybody feels fine. But in a scenario where you can use a long time proven ASA which is free of patterns, you should use ASA definitely. Some other remarks more than the thing you asked?
Schon gut.
I've got a question. Wouldn't the ISPs for SMS, become mad when you always send the full packet length of SMS, because they calculate that so many people send only yes and no, and this is too bad and so on?
I have this nagging feeling that the total cost of SMS traffic will stay below what they make from it. Mikro?
I know a bit about SMS sending from telcos, and I think I can say that mass SMS or cryptography with SMS will definitively be no performance problem. In the networks or the network use we have today. Maybe it's different tomorrow if every one of us is sending 200 SMS per second, but I don't think that this will happen.
What do you mean, no performance?
No performance in the networks and no performance in the gateways. No performance problems.
No impact, no, of course not. No. Look at what a voice call does to the network in terms of bits per second. And
my question is, have you considered using some compression scheme on text-only SMSs like Static Huffman, where you don't need any dictionary transferred, which would maybe...
We've discussed it. We figured doing Static Huffman encoding on the text is very language-dependent. So we would end up with some kind of static table which matches a lot of different languages, adds a ton of code, because the more static you keep it, the more you actually put in your code base. It's very hard to justify if the gain doesn't start happening until a few hundred bytes into the message. So we figured doing 5 bits per go actually was a choice which was probably suboptimal, but justifiable looking at how much extra code we'd have to put into the base. So.
Usually you have very small messages, SMS, so compression will not provide so much performance advantages.
And SMS communication culture provides for users already providing their own compression into their messages.
Another question about the initial handshake. When I have first contact with somebody who sends me his public key, so two SMS if he is paranoid and takes the high security one, two SMS for the modulus and two SMS for the exponent, that's four SMS.
No. If somebody sends you a key, it's either two or three SMSs long.
Okay, and then I look at my, I phone him and say, oh, I have your key, let's wait. I look at the display and shout the fingerprint. Okay, do you have in mind in future any kind of certificate or self-sign,
Web
of trust, something like that?
Can somebody turn this microphone down just a tiny little bit, because it's way too loud? We have a system where you can sign a public key. We have detached signatures which can sign any SEMS object, be it a message, a key revocation, or a key. Thank you. So we can, a key can be signed in the same way that a PGP key is signed. So if you and I have a mutual acquaintance who we trust, I can send his signature over my key, and we don't need to do this voice verification of the fingerprint. But yes, a voice verification of the fingerprint is a good idea. The big key has the length of the bits is two SMSs long. So if we send it unencrypted, it takes up three SMSs with a little bit of metadata.
You need some padding. We use also in this scheme some padding, some additional information which is specified in the protocol description, and we have made the design decision that we if somebody wants to have a really high secure environment, I think it's acceptable to invest a third message for sending a key. But you are right, it was a discussion to modify the key length that even a high secure key fits into two SMS messages.
We figured the vast majority of the traffic would be messages and not keys. So compromising on sending one extra SMS was okay.
One other question. I was thinking of, because you're saying that SMSs are quite expensive, I think it's actually cheaper in most countries, at least in Belgium it is, to set up a data call to the receiving phone and then just transfer the message as a data stream and not use the SMS system at all. So do you think that your encryption scheme would be fit for that, or do you have extensions to the protocol which would allow such a use?
Well, presently we're looking at organizers, and some organizers are into the phone where they would have access to those SMSs, but a lot of users carry their phone in a different pocket than their organizer. So the organizer would actually not be connected to the phone at the time to take the data call. So the phone wouldn't know what to do with the data call, would start ringing, and then the user would have to grab the organizer from one pocket, the phone from the other, grab the wire, hold the infrared in the right place, which is a whole different idea than making the message come in on the phone and then at your leisure noticing that it says cannot be displayed here, which is what it does if it's 8-bit data, and then say, oh, that's probably a SEMS message, and hook up your organizer. So we've looked at those alternatives and figured they weren't suitable for our purpose in this time frame.
Something else you could maybe do is that for key exchange, use the infrared port. So just like you can do with Nokia, do V-card exchange, do a key exchange, a SEMS key exchange using infrared communication, so you don't have to set up to send SMSs.
Yes, we thought about that. That's part
this
of.
This is a user option. If the user wants it, he invites it.
Yeah, it's not so big problem if you have a. We have a documented file format, we have a documented key format, and we have everybody can use the infrared to transport a packet, and then it's really easy to implement. Maybe we will implement it, maybe somebody else can implement, but it's not a big hack.
There's an endless world of possibilities. You could imagine a world where as soon as payment systems happen, see the last lecture, I can imagine a world where I can pay some random passerby, some random phone number somewhere that I know has SEMS, to remail my SEMS message. Any end user could also be a remailer. Remailers could sit in old Nokia 9110 organizer phones, and you could basically give the remailer to somebody to make voice calls on. There's an endless world of possibilities. Yes, sending over infrared, using the internet for the key server infrastructure, and you can send SMSs to any random key server to get the key for any number. It's just work. It's we're concentrating on getting this code base finished. Writing protocol has been done, and our job now is to write some clients, make nice GUIs for them, and possibly make some money, so we can make back some of the money we've spent in developing all this. But if other people want to pursue other avenues with this software or with this protocol, then by all means be our guest. We're very open to people talking about implementing it for their favorite platform or thinking about solutions they would like to build with this. We're definitely open for all kinds of projects, both very commercial ones and very free and sort of homebrew style ones.
You said you have this blob file where all the key rings are stored in. That's this blob file.
Yeah.
Where all the key rings are stored.
Not just
in.
The key rings, everything.
Yeah, everything. The messages too?
Yes, there's actual mailbox format inside that. So there's multiple mailboxes that the user can have with old messages that came in before.
Okay. But if I have this file and you have an open source project, can you extract these messages from this file?
If you have the user's passphrase.
Yes, if I attack this with a dictionary attack, I have all the messages from this.
This is the problem. If
you choose a passphrase that would come out of a dictionary attack, then yes, that's a problem. Basically, we encrypt the blob using IES in 256 bit mode.
And optimized, and we put every security we can provide into it. And but well, if you use a empty passphrase, what should we do? We can do nothing. You're right. This is a real world problem. This is a really biggest problem. But there is definitely no solution.
User education. The GUI version is going to have a nice user manual which explains these things. That if they choose test as a passphrase.
So aufgeschmissen.
Wenn dieses Blob liegt, dann oder irgendwie rausgezogen wird, dann bist du eh aufgeschmissen. Nee. Also dann ist eh alles weg.
Nein.
Wenn dieses Blob was?
It's encrypted.
Ja, aber dann gibt es die Möglichkeit, diese Attacke durchzuführen.
Yes.
Wenn du eine lokale Sicherheit deines Devices hast, dann hast du keine.
If somebody steals your mobile phone, the question is, what happens if the blob file is accessible to an attacker? And we say yes, if somebody steals your phone and you have two short passwords, you have a problem. But if you have a sufficient long passphrase, you have not even in a scenario somebody steals your mobile phone. And we cannot provide more security because it's the only secret you share with a phone is your only authentication is a passphrase, and you should choose it appropriately.
Anybody with covert access to the device you use has access to anything you do because they could install a keylogger. They could replace the insights of the device with whatever is friendly to them. So covert access to the device is something you cannot do anything about. It's the overt stealing of the device, the Flag Day security model where somebody comes in, steals the device, and you no longer have access to it, but they do.
One non-crypto question, do you have any denial of service prevention ideas about fragmented packets or something? While it would be very expensive to pull something like that off, it may be a problem for devices with more memory or something.
I had to convince him that it was really not a problem if somebody could use some weird cryptographic statistical property to send us, if they sent us 1,000,000 messages, one would be processed as true.
No, and even a scenario, somebody you send you 1,000,000 messages, it will not perform the Breitenbach attack. So if you have
I didn't mean about crypto. I mean if you have a blob file and SMSs can be two, messages can be over two SMSs, then you basically have to store SMSs where you didn't get the second part, stuff
yeah,
like that.
We have sort of cyclic buffers for that. So at some point you would lose. If you send enough trash to somebody, you could interfere with their stream of communications.
Yeah.
But then again, if you send enough SMS trash to a phone, at some point you're interfering with the communications anyway.
Yeah. Strategy of the Amsterdam police at the moment.
Is there any protection against recording a secret SMS and sending it later again, maybe a month later or something?
Replay attacks work, but not on signed messages, because signed messages have a timestamp that's inside the cryptographically signed envelope. So if you sign it, the time that you signed it becomes part of it. Of course, if the signer could set his time to whatever he wants, but that's always a problem. Hmm? Exactly.
Okay, last 5 minutes.
Done. Hello. What's about the license of your algorithm and the product?
The algorithms are free. The protocol is free. Anybody can implement it. There is no patent, no license, no fees, no nothing.
Okay.
As far as the code we wrote, the reference implementations, non-commercial use is free. As soon as there's finished versions, they'll be available for download for whatever your favorite platform is, as long as we've decided to write an implementation for it. Commercial use of that is subject to license, and the license policy is, as of yet, not worked out. But there will be a commercial license policy, and I think it very much depends on the market, the type of license, the number of clients, I could think of all sorts of weird licensing schemes that would make us hilariously rich. However, in practice, cryptography companies are going under all around us. NAI is no longer doing PGP. Freedom Network doesn't exist anymore. So we're pretty much on a road with lots of corpses lying left and right. So. But yes, if you have a company that wants to talk about licensing, I'm available right after this lecture.
Additional information, the crypto stuff is hand-optimized to avoid patents. There are provably secure schemes where are patents of U.S. universities, so we have designed a new one, which will be at a hash function. In some scenario and put it in. We have provably security, at least it's the same security as the provably secure signature scheme if you take a look in this platform, and we will publish it free, and so we have avoided patent wherever it's possible.
Last question?
I have a question concerning the parameters you use with RSA. You said you use a very small E3, to make it faster,
yeah.
Encryption. But what's with decryption? I think...
Decryption takes longer, but you cannot... This is a mathematical reason. You cannot choose a small decryption exponent.
That's the thing. So you have experience how much longer this decryption...
Calculation. You have in the signature, as in the screen where you can use the public key exponent with three, you have two operation, and you have randomized. You have it's a big factor. Yeah. In practice, you can calculate about 256 ones, and this means a lot of additional operations. But this is not possible to make it faster without losing a big amount of security.
This will mean that the high security mode on very slow platforms, such as the old POMs, could be ridiculously slow, which is a price we have to pay. We can't design a protocol to run on the oldest possible hardware just fine. People using very old palms should probably want to use medium security keys, or buy a new organizer.
But as you think, sending a key to somebody is much faster. And in a scenario you want to decrypt something, you take the message, store it, and though we have a lower real-time request on this scenario. So really final question?
Hold on. Seconds? Minutes? Days?
Depends.
Never days. Key generation of a high security key, which is the worst case, on a very slow handheld such as the old palms, could take forever. Could take up to a day. Sort of rough guesses. We haven't tested this, but that's sort of a rough guess. I think that's acceptable and something you have to live with. If you look at the newer organizers, let's say the 9210 or the 02, those are hundreds of megahertz of ARM9 or whatever, and you don't have that problem.
Solution for this one could be you calculate your key on your PC and transfer the blob to the organizer.
I don't really like that one because the whole reason to use your organizer for stuff like this is that you don't trust your PC sometimes.
We have discussed that we want to generate schemes where we share the key generation between the palm, between the personal device and the computer, and we can design with some mathematician voodoo that we have the security of both then involved in the key generation. But this is a research topic and we're working on it.
Version 2. Let's end it with this because we have to get out of here. The next speakers are waiting. And if there's any questions, talk to us later.